Hello, I'm Andrea Tabchar, a college public relations professor based in Toronto. My goal for my podcast is to interview PR practitioners with interesting stories to tell, and I wanted to share those with my students. I've decided to call it PR Delivered.
We all have a responsibility to contribute to that trust in a relationship. So it doesn't matter if you're just starting out in a new grad and you're talking to a peer or you're talking to somebody who is more senior than you. You know, I like to say we're all leaders. It's not about title. It's really, as you know, there's lots of influencers in an organization who aren't the senior most people. And so for me, trust cuts across so many aspects of not just our personal lives, but our professional lives as well.
Emerging Issues is a popular course I teach in the Bachelor of Public Relations program at Humber College. It's a seminar course where students explore communication topics of interest, topics that are on the PR radar but still evolving. The impact of AI, the role of digital detoxing, diversity and inclusion are some examples. For the past couple of years, and together with my colleague, Humber's PR practitioner in residence, Eileen Toby, I've conducted a seminar on trust in PR. Eileen and I explore the importance of trust in the PR profession and the consequences when trust is compromised. We draw on a range of organizations that are either succeeding or failing on the trust front. In preparation for this year's class, Eileen introduced me to her colleague, Jordan Berman, currently VP Global Corporate Affairs, Business Transformation and Strategic Planning at Apotex, a Canadian-based global pharmaceutical company, and a one-time graduate of Humber's PR program. Jordan has an MBA and is faculty at the Schulich School of Business, as well as an instructor at the Schulich Executive Education Center. If that's not impressive enough, Jordan has recently written The Trust Trifecta, a leader's guide to hitting the trust jackpot. Amazon reviews have been positive, citing the book's useful application of trust principles. One reviewer stated, "It's an accurate, concise book that can prove invaluable to everyday life as well as in the corporate world." After reading the book myself, I thought that interviewing Jordan on PR Delivered would loop both students and new grads in to hear his thoughts on building trust, focusing on communicating consistently, transparently, and authentically. Welcome, Jordan. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak to us today about the importance of trust in PR leadership.
Thanks, Andrea. I look forward to our discussion.
So we'll start with the first question. Why don't you tell us about yourself and how you came to write this book?
Sure. Well, I've been working in PR and communications for a long time now, coming up on 30 years. And I think one thing that I've been really fortunate about is that I've had great people to not just work with and learn from, but to support me in my career. And I think the other aspect of my time is that I have been able to work in different settings, which has been a key aspect of my development as well. So I've worked in small family-owned businesses. I've worked in large multinational publicly traded companies. I spent time in the not-for-profit sector, and I've spent time on the agency side. So other than the public sector, I've been really fortunate to have all these experiences. As it relates to the book, I'll be honest with you, it started off as an idea just for an article, and I was fortunate to have a colleague of mine and a mentor really motivate me to write the book and suggested that the topic was much bigger than just an article. And so I have to hand it to him and thank him. And that's really where the idea came about.
That's excellent. And, you know, we were commenting earlier when we were chatting that the book is just over 100 pages that, and it seems to sort of satisfy people's appetite for shorter things, right?
That's exactly it. You know, when I started writing it, I mean, the truth is I didn't really want to write even an article until I felt like I had something to say that at least I thought would be of value or would be meaningful. And then when I was motivated to write the book, to your point about the length, I wasn't quite sure I could hit the 60 or 65,000 words, mostly because I didn't know if the topic needed that much. I mean, trust as a topic for sure, but trust through the lens I was talking about, I thought it could be dealt with in a much shorter period, and hence the short read and the shorter book, as you say.
That's awesome. Why do you think the topic of trust is so interesting?
You know, I think there's a few reasons, and I think these will probably resonate, or I hope, with your students. If I think about it from a profession standpoint, so sort of big picture, I mean, I think we both know, and hopefully your students do, that it's really the bedrock of what we do for a living. People trust us to tell stories, and there are a wide variety of stakeholders that enable this trust to us. And so that is a significant accountability and responsibility we have that people place with us. Now, hopefully we're not just trustworthy when we tell those stories. Hopefully they're also credible and compelling, but that's sort of from the big picture. But then when I also think about organizations, so if you take, you know, from profession down to organizations, we know there is abundance of research to say that high trust cultures outperform low trust cultures on many dimensions, whether it's financial performance, employee engagement, morale, productivity, absenteeism, you name it. And so you really have to think about, as not just a leader, but an employee, how can you contribute to creating and fostering that trust-based culture? And then the third area I would say, and this is very relevant, particularly for people starting out their career, is that we all have a responsibility to contribute to that trust in a relationship. So it doesn't matter if you're just starting out in a new grad and you're talking to a peer, or you're talking to somebody who is more senior than you. You know, I like to say we're all leaders. It's not about title. It's really, as you know, there's lots of influencers in an organization who aren't the senior most people. And so for me, trust cuts across so many aspects of not just our personal lives, but our professional lives as well.
Thank you for that. And it's important to remind, as you said, students and anyone in our profession that it is the bedrock of what we do. You dedicated a significant amount of attention to the importance of transparent communication between an organization's leadership and employees, citing research that supports the notion that employees who feel better about their work environment are more engaged, much to what you were saying earlier, and that the result is a much bigger or better, more positive effect on the organization. So, in your opinion, what has been the biggest transparency challenge for organizations during COVID-19? And would you note any particular stars?
That's a great question. I would say in terms of challenges, they're probably not unsurprising or unfamiliar. And that is that, at least from colleagues I've heard at other companies, there still sometimes can be a reluctance to talk about either how the organization's going to be navigating some certain aspect of operations during COVID, or as it relates to employees, because they don't have all the answers. Because as you know, the situation is dynamic and it's fluid and it's evolving. And so they are concerned about being hemmed in, being tied to something. And so, you know, I talk about in the book that that shouldn't preclude us from just telling people everything we know at a given point in time. And it's fine to qualify it. And most importantly, it's fine to say, I don't know. So I think that challenge, again, is a familiar one where, particularly for some leaders, they feel like they have to have all the answers. And if they don't, they won't say anything. And the challenge, of course, is that employees see through that, because employees are adults. And so we say they're the most important asset, but we don't treat them like adults and tell them everything. The second part of your question is interesting. You know, there are lots of organizations, whether it's in the corporate or government sector, who I think have done really well. But one example that comes to mind is a company called Gravity Payments. It's a payment-based company in the US, and their CEO is Dan Price. And why I love this is it is an example that when you are transparent, it's not just about telling people the truth, it's actually about bringing them into the conversation and having them help you solve an issue. And here's what it was in the case of Gravity Payments. A couple of months after the pandemic started in March of last year, a payment company saw a big hit to their revenue. There were people out in store shopping, so there were fewer payments going through. And Dan was faced with a challenge. He could either declare bankruptcy, or he could reduced the headcount in his organization. And those would have been, I would say, the more frequently called on responses in that situation. Instead, what Dan did is he was very transparent about the financial position of the company with employees. And then by doing so, employees said, well, we would like to contribute to solving that problem. And we have some ideas. Why don't you meet with us? And so he met with every single employee, I think 40 or 50 people in his company. And what came out of it was each employee made a commitment to take a pay cut based on their personal circumstances that they could afford for a few months. And together, all those 40 and 50 people, including Dan, who took a cut, nobody lost their job. The company stayed afloat and in fact has rebounded and is doing quite well. And so that's an example, again, where if you're transparent and just give, you don't have to solve everything yourself. The whole benefit of different perspectives is that you don't have the monopoly on wisdom. Other people have ideas about how to solve stuff, including your employees. So I just think it's a really powerful example of the benefits of transparency.
And of listening, right?
And of listening, like, spot on.
You know, the whole notion of listening is an underdeveloped skill in terms of what we teach, in terms of how we behave. And I see it over and over again, the importance of listening. So that's a great example. It's a real feel good example. And you do, go into some detail on it in the book. In your book, you stress the importance of building trust through nonverbal communication and listening. So we're heading into that direction. And you comment that this can be more challenging in the context of cross-cultural sensitivity. My question is that with equity, diversity, and inclusion in the spotlight in 2021, do you anticipate a change in trust-building approaches? And do you think that this is an area that really challenges the PR industry?
I would say I hope so, to the first part of your question. I hope that it does change our approach because, as you know, diversity inclusion has not only become more important for a variety of reasons, but it is a highly sensitive and highly emotional topic area. And as communications professionals, our goal is really to build trust. And so we have to have a certain deftness, if you will, a certain proficiency and a certain diplomacy when talking about that. And I think we all have an opportunity, whether we're in PR or not, to improve that. But as it relates to challenges for the industry, I would say it does, because while diversity and inclusion in and of itself includes other cultures, what I'm really talking about is a company like mine. We have a huge footprint in India, for example. And while we have many people from India working here in Canada for our company, we have over 70 dialects just in Ontario alone. That diversity of our workforce doesn't necessarily address the unique needs of Canadians when we are working with and communicating with our colleagues in India. They have a certain way based on their culture of communicating. We have a certain way. And we both collectively and together need to understand and appreciate those differences so they don't become challenges. So when I'm talking about cross-cultural, to your question, yes, I think part of it is about diversity, but it's really about ensuring that you understand and appreciate that each culture has its unique way of communicating. And so the challenge for us, if we want to talk about being more inclusive as an industry, is to build campaigns and programs and messaging that actually addresses all of those cross-cultural sensitivities.
That is a challenge for our industry and other industries today, right? And more needs to be done. And I'm hopeful in 2021 that we'll see more will be done. Towards the end of your book, you included a quote that says, "Every time you have to speak, you are auditioning for leadership." This seems to be targeting PR practitioners that aren't yet in leadership positions. So while your book is, in fact, a leader's guide to hitting the trust jackpot, what advice might you have about the importance of trust for young PR practitioners?
The first piece of advice I'd say is ignore the sub headline of my book. It was called a leader's guide, but it is not meant, again, only for, quote, leaders, that is by title. You know, I would say for young grads, you know, the most important thing is to establish trust and rapport with people that are going to be counting on you and looking toward you for counsel. And whether that is your CEO and president or your particular manager or boss in your area, your ability to foster that trust is going to be critical to your success as you grow and develop. That's why I don't think it's just about leadership. And I think you said something earlier, which I think is really important, Andrea, and that's about listening. And for me, it really is about listening and learning. So we have two ears for a reason and one mouth for a reason. We should be doing more listening and less talking. And particularly, by the way, when we're new to a profession, we've got lots to learn, and we've got lots to learn still today. I've been at this 30 years. You've been at this a long time. We both continue to learn. Mm-hmm. And so my advice is to actively listen. Make sure you're prepared when you show up so that you can be one of those influencers, so you can build that kind of trust. And I think that's how you're going to be able to grow and build the kind of personal brand you want to in this industry.
Thank you for that. Good advice. Like, listen, be prepared. I'm going to throw in, turn your camera on in Zoom calls.
Absolutely.
Pet peeve of mine.
Well, because it's all about connections, right? That's mm-hmm. ultimately what you're trying to do, is build meaningful connections. So there's another quote I say, that every interaction you have with someone, and it could be one-on-one, it could be one on 100 or one on 10,000, it's an opportunity for you to make a meaningful difference to that person in that interaction. And by meaningful, I mean, they could walk away and say, wow, Andrea is really knowledgeable, or she's really compassionate, or really sensitive, or really understanding. Pick your positive adjective. But I think as Andrea, what you want to do is leave some kind of meaningful, positive imprint on that person. And I think the more that you listen and communicate, as you said at the outset, consistently, transparently, and authentically, the better chance you're going to have to make that kind of impact.
Thank you. Good advice. Good advice for the students. And, you know, I think they could get a lot of value out of what you have written in the book. What have you learned, or what has surprised you in the process of writing this book? Not everybody gets a chance to write a book. So what did you find?
I found that it was in some ways easier than I had thought, and in some ways harder than I had thought. I think it was more difficult, in all candor, because I didn't follow a prescribed process. It's the way I normally work also. It's just more, you know, run-of-the-mill thinking, and I get it down. Having said that, I think, like many people in our profession, I spent far too much time editing and re-editing, not just the same sentence, but the same paragraph, sometimes days and weeks, until I had a nudge from my friend who motivated me, my mentor, saying, just write, just get everything out. You'll organize all your thoughts after, you'll do the editing after. So, you know, I think there's that. The other thing I learned is really about the importance of a network. And this is something that I'm sure students talk about, or maybe learn about in school in the program now. But I'm just so fortunate to have been able to build a network over the years, where I had people that gave me advice, early drafts of the book that I sent to, that I trust, that were really candid with me about, this isn't working, or I don't like this example. And so that's really important. I learned about the importance of that. And I think the surprise is probably how it's resonated with people. I really didn't know what to expect. And, you know, I think anybody who writes something, that if you have the ability to impact somebody else with your words, whether it's verbally or in writing, it could be really rewarding and really fulfilling. And so I think I was a little probably surprised about how rewarding and enriching I found it.
That's great. Well, congratulations for doing it. I think it's very impressive, and it's a very helpful book. I'm going to turn it over to you to share some final thoughts. I know you're an educator. You're now an author. You are a very seasoned practitioner. What would you like to say to the listeners?
I'd say probably two things. One, be open to experiences. I know when you're just starting out in your career, you might have some idea about where you'd like it to go, and that's great. And others may have less of a clear idea. And what I would say is, that's okay too. You don't have to commit to one job, one sector, one company forever. It's really about getting some experiences and finding out where your strengths really play a meaningful role, and where you can make the kind of contribution you can do. That's one. The other is, and it goes back to the very beginning, how you set this all up, Andrea, is that never forget, trust is the currency. That is how you will not just fuel your career, but it's how you will represent the profession and your colleagues in industry in a really respectable way. And there's nothing that should ever compromise that. And that's important because, let's face it, there are some times when it'll be challenging, where you're going to have disagreements. about how to position something, about when or who should say something or which channel you should use. But always, if you have trust as the guiding light, as the beacon, I think that's going to serve you well. So those are a couple final thoughts.
Thank you, Jordan, for joining us on PR Delivered today. I really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you for being here and sharing your wisdom.
I appreciate the opportunity and enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
That was Jordan Berman, author of The Trust Trifecta, A Leader's Guide to Hitting the Trust Jackpot. PR Delivered is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and others. If you'd like to reach me, Andrea Tavchar, I'm available on Twitter and LinkedIn. Thank you to Ryan Garbett for music and production.